The next presentation on health information exchange comes to you by James Kirkward, MPH, who is the Senior Director of eHealth at the Association of State and Territorial Health Officials, otherwise known as ASTO, located in Arlington, Virginia. Jim works on policy related to informatics with state and territorial health departments, and also, as a side job, has been on loan to ONC, immersed in meaningful use. He did his public health training at the University of Albany, and his talk is entitled "Public Health Involvement in the Health Information Exchange Planning Process." Please welcome Jim Kirkwood.
Thank you. And one person I'd like to acknowledge is Anita Samuel, who's in the back row there. Stand up, Anita. She did much of the work that I'll be talking about today when looking at the state health information exchange plans, which if you've ever read through a state health information exchange plan, you probably never want to do it again. She did it 34 times, so it's pretty amazing, I think. So one of the things I'd like to talk about is sort of anecdotally we've heard that at the beginning of the health information exchange planning process, that public health isn't involved at all. You know, public health's not there. I don't know who public health is. So we wanted to find out what is public health involvement in the health information exchange process, and what are they doing? What are some states doing to get involved and work with HIE? Obviously, it seems like a good where HIEs are trying to show that they have a value and a benefit to their constituency, the healthcare system in the state. Public health data could be useful service in reporting public health data to public health and providing data back through things like immunization registries could be useful service that they could provide. So we wanted to sort of look at those issues, and also we wanted to find out what the challenges were for state public health agencies' involvement in HIE. Up until this point, we've heard a lot about what HIEs are doing, and they may or may not be involving public health. But we wanted to get the public health perspective on what's going on with HIE. So. A little background on the High Tech Act. I'll go through relatively quickly because I think most people know everything, have heard enough about the high tech and meaningful use. But they had five sort of objectives, or they call them pillars, of the High Tech Act. One is they want to improve quality, safety, efficiency, and reduce health disparities. Obviously, there's public health objectives in there. They want to reduce public health disparities. Also want to engage patients and families. Improve care coordination to essentially reduce cost and, reduce unnecessary care. And also to ensure adequate privacy and security protections for personal health information. And then finally, and most importantly probably, is improve population and public health. So background on high-tech funding, if you recall, originally about $500 million went out to states and state-designated entities to support health information exchanges. About $37 billion is to support meaningful use incentives. Hospitals get a base of about $2 million, and then some kind of formula based on there who they have for Medicare and Medicaid to support to get for meaningful use incentives, and then and providers get depending on whether they get Medicaid or Medicare, they have to choose, they get funding too. But there's also been very little direct support of public health agencies. I think at the time of funding actually included in the High Tech Act is about $30 million. Now, some funding has gone through, more recently, through the Affordable Care Act and the Public Health Trust Fund, which is basically $15 billion over 5 years to support public health agencies. And, of course, as Congress changes and policies change within Congress, we'll just have to ensure that stays there. So essentially what happened was when public health agencies were getting involved in the HIE process, they had asked for funding and sort of be at the forefront asking for funding through either the HIE or thinking about strategically how they're going to use funding to support their objectives. Another thing about the High Tech Act, we often forget that high tech, this is where meaningful use first came up. Sort of the meaningful use of public health data, meaningful use of electronic health records, including the use of public health data and reporting of public health data to public health agencies, and also to improve care coordination. And all the activities at the Office of National Coordinator for Health IT to support those activities. So regional extension centers, if we recall, regional extension centers are used to help implement electronic health records at critical access hospitals and primary care providers, university-based education programs, or provide graduate certificates, and I think in some cases degrees, to increase the number of public health health informatics people, including public health informatics. About 25% of the university-based education programs are the goal is to have about 25% with public health informatics. If you are online, and you can actually get a $10,000 incentive to help pay for the coursework. And then, of course, community college and HIT programs and curricula. So about a few community colleges receive funding. Community colleges and actually also universities receive funding to develop curricula for what would health IT curriculum look like in a community college to support. Obviously, the administration is supporting community colleges very heavily to retrain and help people re-enter the workforce. And also community colleges to provide specific training for health IT, so they can, because the health IT industry is in dire need of people. And then, of course, the strategic health IT advanced research, the SHARPS projects, which are doing cutting-edge research and to support health information, you know, clinical decision support and areas like that. So for the specifically for states, for the high-tech requirements, the states were required to identify a health IT coordinator and a state-designated entity to facilitate health information exchange. Health information exchange being the verb and not the noun. The health IT coordinator could be within any state agency or office, and the state so when you think about the health IT coordinator, where they could be, and they were in a lot of interesting places. They could have been in the public health agency. They could have been actually in the governor's office. We've heard about a health IT coordinator being in a lieutenant governor's office. They might have been in a sort of a super cabinet within the within the governor's cabinet, so a sort of a health cabinet. I think that's the way it is in Kentucky, I believe. And they also could be within the public health agency supporting, you know, public health objectives, depending on what goes on there. And then they also had to support a state-designated entity, identify a state-designated entity, which could have been a state agency, a nonprofit, or a quasi-governmental agency. Think of a public health, public authority that could have supported, that would exist essentially to, you know, administer a toll road, such as New York State Thruway, for example, where they would take in the tolls, pave the road, take care of it, and support that. But it's usually those quasi-governmental agencies might actually be sort of controls. There might be appointments from the governor's office, from different legislators to sit on the board of the agency. States were also required to develop strategic and operational plans, and those operational plans had to be approved by the HIEs, or had to be approved by ONC. So one of the things that we did initially when wondering and trying to figure out how involved public health agencies were in the HIE planning process is that we did a survey about a year ago asking what is your involvement in the planning process, what funding do you need to support public health, like real public health involvement in the planning process, and what are the challenges that you're finding working with the HIEs and working with the larger healthcare system in the states. One of the things that we've heard from people anecdotally is that, you know, public health has to sort of think a little bit differently. Instead of us just public health just deciding what we want to get from healthcare and deciding what our surveys are going to look like, what kind of data we want, how many lines, you know, how many things are there going to be, public health has to sort of realign and sort of work more closely with healthcare and sort of be led by healthcare in some ways. So they almost have to get on the bus. The survey was in the field for 3 weeks during April and May, and we sent to informatics leads or state health officials if no leads existed. We had 44 respondents, 31 states responded to funding questions, I think. Some of the funding questions we asked were, what is your requirements for the three different meaningful use objectives, immunization, electronic lab reporting, and syndromic surveillance, and a lot of times they didn't have that information. So can't see the full question, but it says the question is, where is the HIT coordinator in relation to your public health agency? Again, we wanted to find out where the HIT coordinator is, what is the interaction that's going on there. Luckily, which we were very happy to get this result of 0% were not engaged, but then we actually had a state health agency, you know, and then about over 50% were the state health agency is on some sort of multi-agency collaborative involved in the state. almost 30% had a state HIT coordinator that's actually a public health agency employee. That was actually surprising for us because anecdotally we'd heard that no, public health agencies the HIT coordinator isn't there. I think Seth, I think one thing you mentioned in the past with Seth Foldy in the front row, in Wisconsin when he was the state public health official, was that you wanted to make sure that the state public health agency was at the table, so you really sort of hustled to get that HIT coordinator in the state. And I think that number of 30% is actually probably up more now after some of the changes in administration, as health IT coordinators, after the changes in governors, about 28 changed over the past year, some of that number probably has gone up and is probably over 30, close to 40% at this point. And then some of the other responses were that public health employees, a co-chair, an advisory group, a health agency employee, but outside the public health. Think of a mega agency where we have, I think, about 8 states in the country not only deal with public health, but they also deal with Medicaid licensing, tattoo regulation, and a bunch of different other activities in the state, and different regulatory activities. Another question we asked was about the public health agency's interaction with Medicaid planning activities. At this point, when we asked the survey, state Medicaid planning activities weren't all that far along, but we wanted to understand whether public health was involved with those Medicaid planning activities at that point. Medicaid grantees in states, the state Medicaid agency, are required and have been required to submit their Medicaid planning documents for how they're going to react to meaningful use, how they're going to support meaningful use. One of the elements of the plan could be a plan to include public health in funding support. It's a 90-10 match, which isn't always easy to use because it depends on the proportion of people proportion of providers that send in data, providers and population within, for example, an immunization registry. So if 40% of the kids in an immunization registry are Medicaid patients, some proportion, 90% of that proportion could probably be supported with a Medicaid match if the state chooses to use it. But that, in that case also, the state has to find 10% of that support that they're going to need for their immunization registry to match the 90%. 10% doesn't sound like a lot of money, but when state public health agencies are getting cut 15% a year, 10% of anything is a lot of money. So the results for this, we found that about 20% weren't involved in Medicaid planning. About 60% were actively participating, and then about another 15% said there was general awareness of what was going on, but it was sort of more of a squishy answer where they said it wasn't clear whether or not they were, how involved they were. One of the things we found out is a few states have been including as a core requirement for meaningful use. Obviously, a state can choose to include public health, some of the optional public health objectives in their meaningful use plan to require it. I believe Oregon had started to go down that road to include reporting immunization registries to support their system and increase the number of kids in the system. And a few other states have started wanting to require things in their Medicaid plan. We asked, some of these answers are obvious. Which of the following best describes the barriers to public health agencies' involvement in state health information exchange planning activities? About 15% said that they didn't know how the state public health agency should be involved, which is actually a little bit lower than what we expected. I think we would have expected a little bit higher, actually, at that point. Big answer, of course, was a lack of resources. Another interesting answer was the HIE focus on private health care. So public health agencies didn't feel that their involvement was really, in a sense, not wanted, but they were at a lower priority than other aspects of health information exchange. 10% said there were no barriers, which was great. And then others were general. A lot of people just expanded on funding and described what a few other unusual issues, we could call it. So one of the things I said what Anita did was look through the state strategic and operational HIE plans. The Office of National Coordinator, anybody can take a look at what the approved plans from the Office of the National Coordinator of their particular state. At the time, We had, and when we did this in May, about 34 strategic plans were actually approved and posted on the site, and we had 34 operational plans too. And then there's a sort of a summary plan too that they included. The things we looked at were the inclusion of public health agencies and governance, the depth of inclusion in, of meaningful use objectives as they went through for immunization, ELR, and syndromic surveillance, and then a timeline for meaningful use objectives, which had to be included in the plan, and then budget, sort of the gold standard, I think, of in understanding whether or not public health was in an HIE project was whether they whether the HIE actually included public health as somebody who would be funded by the HIE plan, whether in the plan during the planning process where they received their initial grant or whether they received their operational funding. So think about, I think it was like, let's say if a state got $500,000 or $800,000 worth of funding for planning, then they could have gotten about $6 million for operations. That's sort of an average look. So a state, a public health agency could have gotten funding for those. A few things we found out. Obviously, there are many legal hurdles for data sharing and use of public health data. I mean, that's Lynn explained that in his talk, and I think that goes for a few states we found. A few states, you know, where the best example I could give you is in something like immunization, where a public health there is an opt out for immunization for somebody over the age of, let's say, 20, but 19. They, I'm sorry,
19.
Yeah, 19 in New York State, but then there's a different sort of different way of consent for the HIE. So there's sort of conflicting. So there might be a conflicting consent of how the public health agency receives data on a voluntary basis, but with the public health agency system and the HIE. Some state public health agencies are leveraging HIEs to support their public health objectives, which is sort of a no-brainer. But a lot of states we found were actually, public health agency was actually the only one who's actually exchanging data, and sort of the healthcare system was following the state into the process. And so public health could actually be shown as a good actor and a good trading partner, then show what was going on in the state. Immunization information systems were almost always the most commonly included objective in the HIE plan, just because some of the states have found that, you know, if they provide data back, and one of the objectives of the immunization support branch at the CDC is that they have bidirectional communication. So for electronic lab reporting, clinical value going back to the providers and as great as it is for immunization, and the same goes for syndromic surveillance. So the clinical value isn't as great. There are many internal IT infrastructure issues, lack of internal public health interoperability. I think we heard if anybody was at the vendor discussion yesterday, we heard from quite a few. We heard from, I believe it was Regan Streif, talking about in dealing with the state public health agency, they have to deal with not just one public health agency as an enterprise, but they have to deal with multiple different programs that have different reporting requirements and require reporting in a different way. I think we've heard from, following the meeting yesterday, I heard from Huagan Chang in New York saying that, you know, they, when they require lab reports from, let's say, lead, communicable disease, cancer, they have the same format, similar standards for each other. Many HIEs are still in the planning stages. I think this is one of the biggest issues in dealing with an HIE, I think, for a lot of states, especially when they're not active and there's not a lot of interoperability in exchange of data, is that what does a provider do when deciding? What is their business choice? What choice do they make in dealing with the HIE, especially if there's a subscription process for dealing with the HIE? Will the HIE exist? Will it actually prove that it has a value? Do you deal with that, or do you deal directly with the health department? And then, of course, the health department has to decide how they're going to work with the HIE, what programs they want to use to gather data through the HIE, and how they're going to expand that process. And public health's role is not always clear in the plans. I think we saw quite a few plans where public health wasn't mentioned, or it said, we will deal with public health in the future after the HIE gets up and running. I think that was very common in quite a few of these different plans. We interviewed about 6 public health agencies, deciding to get them from the, after looking at the plans, seeing activities where there was public health involvement in the health information exchange, and we did about 40 to 60 minute interviews with them, and described and looked at the successes and challenges in interacting with the HIE. Some of the big challenges were informatics workforce. Budget cuts, I think, were obviously states. I think we have heard from ASTO has done surveys in the past where individual states have cut 15% a year over 3 years. So you cut 15% a year, your public health agency over 3 years, you're going to find you're getting really cutting down to the bone. I think we've found that in other surveys that ASTO has done on reaction to budget cuts, about 40% of states have laid off staff. It's probably more than that now. About 50% of states have actually gotten rid of programs because they just couldn't support them. Lack of staff training in informatics, knowledge of HL7 message structure is a big issue. There are very few people in states that can do that. When states feel like they train people up in informatics, sometimes they have to compete with them to keep them with the private sector because there's a great need for trained professionals. And experience using FinMS. We heard from one state when they lost someone who knew how to deal with FinMS, they had a lot of trouble in a very small state where they could find another person who could do that again and trade them up in the process. It was a bigger issue than we thought. And then actually policy staff too was an issue for some states. So having a policy person around that can understand informatics, get a good enough understanding of informatics where they can actually deal with, you know, what would be the regulatory and what would be legislative solutions to support public health interaction. And then, of course, lack of funding. Programmatic funding, the way programmatic funding is structured is that, you know, it doesn't really support infrastructure. You know, we don't really have in all the cooperative agreements for public health through the CDC, we don't have something that actually supports plain old infrastructure, whether it's informatics infrastructure, electronic lab reporting sort of gets that toward that, immunization gets toward that, but it's for a specific program. So somebody might say that it's important, you get funding for these individual programs that are supported by meaningful use, people are very, very limited in how they can use those individuals and the services and the infrastructure they implement for other things if it's not being for that specific program area. And it's understandable since Congress authorizes and the Office of Management and Budget authorizes funding, they want to see that something's happening with that specific program. You know, it's always sort of like the PEPFAR issue with the President's Emergency AIDS Relief funding. So it's easier to show that you're actually providing, you know, drugs to individuals than it is to show that you're supporting an infrastructure for something. So one of the ideas that actually came out of ASTO's policy committee is that we are discussing a position statement on sort of funding to support informatics. And one of the concepts that people have talked about is having a certain percentage of any CDs, of any funding, sort of any funding can support cross-program areas. They do something kind of similar with for preparedness. So if somebody's on an HIV grant through the CDC, they can use up to 5% of their time to respond to other things, to an emergency during a preparedness, whether it's drills or actual response to an event. And then there's also the lack of understanding about the role of public health surveillance. I think almost every state that we talked to said that the healthcare system didn't necessarily understand, even physicians that are required to report on diseases, didn't necessarily understand that public health actually goes out and collects this data. So I think that can actually lead to a few different things going on in a state. So if you imagine that you're going to an HIE meeting or advisory group, people are finding out there's public health reporting going on, consumer groups start to freak out a little bit, and then sort of issues can happen. So just ensuring that people understand the role of public health in the healthcare system in reporting is still a very large issue that people have to deal with, and dealing with consumers and dealing with the healthcare industry. One of the people we talked to said that public health needs to show the business case for data exchange all the time. Essentially, when they deal with their HIE and deal with the providers that are going to be subscribing to the HIE and participating in HIE, there needs to be evidence that something that the public health agency wants to do is going to support a public health objective or a population health objective. So people do not want to, a lot of providers and a lot of large systems don't want to add a data element, let's say, or a feed of data to a public health agency unless they can show it's really will support public health and population health. Privacy concerns need to be addressed quickly. We found from one public health agency that we talked to when privacy issues came up and they didn't address it very quickly, it stalled the HIE planning process. Where the HIE planning process almost, they said it stopped for almost a year, where they're just trying to figure out what the policy would be on opt-in, opt-out, and how the exchange of data is going to happen. While it was generally an issue around the broad issues of dealing with of HIEs and participation and with consumer groups, public health was also, since public health was planning on being involved, it slowed them down too. One of the interesting things we found with interviews is that in public health data use, people view public health differently, even within public health agencies who are working with the HIEs as a primary user or secondary user. One person said, you know, the HIE is primarily set up for clinical users, and the public health discussions, they are sort of lumped into the secondary use committee within the HIE planning process. So if you picture an advisory committee, it's that subgroup that's in secondary use. Another person said, was emphatic that they do not see public health as a secondary user, and their primary user is what it is set up for them, just as almost as a utility is what they said. And then they, said they have to ensure the state that was having trouble with concerns about privacy, they had focused for quite a long time in support and really came up with and started communicating about privacy and developing an understanding of what's going on in the state. State successes, one of the issues that we heard yesterday, we talked about what Regan Street mentioned at the vendor discussion, was that people need to present the public health agency as an enterprise. So state, local, all together, everyone presented, not a group of individual CDC funded or HRSA funded or Department of Agricultural funded programs. It almost has to be as an enterprise. So when a state public health agency is working with the healthcare system, they want to be. A few states have found out that they have to really be strategic about what they're going to ask for what different programs, and coordinate across different programs to deal with the health information exchange. One of the best examples I think we can give is New York with the Universal Public Health Node. In Nebraska, they have an Office of Meaningful Use where they actually change their organization, move the three systems related to meaningful use under one person so they can coordinate in dealing with the health information exchange and also ensure that they coordinate with each other. Obviously allows programs to share knowledge and skills. Michigan is another example of this, where they have strategically found, they have really done some extensive planning to use their funding, although it's, going down all the time, to support their interaction with the HIE. And that goes to the next thing. So these states that we talked to had, HIE funding. And New York is a good example, because they actually had funding from the Medicaid transformation grants that were put out a few years back to support. They chose to use it for health IT funding into their Medicaid transformation grants and called the HEAL New York program. Some states were very focused on the FER. If you recall, the FER was implemented during H1N1 to support public health agencies in response to influenza over that. It's 2009, 2010, and a lot of states use that FER funding to support their immunization registries and to support the connection to their health information exchange. Affordable Care Act, so immunization information system interoperability with EHRs, that was sort of a big issue. One of the questions we had heard anecdotally from some states was that CDC funding doesn't allow states to use that to support working with the HIE. One of the things we found, there's been clarification from the IIS branch And some other states didn't find that was a problem at all anyway in dealing with their HIE. And, of course, electronic laboratory funding, there was a few states that received funding for that. Other successes that they build on track record. As I said before, that some states were the only people that were actually exchanging data with public health. So if there wasn't a great exchange of data, I mean, not everybody is... not every state has a registry for Intermountain Healthcare or Cincinnati Health Bridge. When the public health agency was sort of leading information exchange, they were actually supporting, and it was easy for the state and the state Michigan, where they presented their use cases to the advisory committee. The public health use cases were some of the best use cases and most agreed upon use cases that were out there. I think they said there were 400 use cases used and that were presented to the HIE advisory group, and public health was right up there. A few states have really used policy to support their health information exchange activities and support public health objectives. One of the people we heard from, they said that policy really needs to keep up with the technology. So if you think about how reportable diseases are required in a state, it could happen through statute, it could happen through regulation, it could happen through emergency meeting of the public health board in a state. In Maryland in particular, they had every time they wanted a new reportable disease, they had to go to the state legislature and they had to have it implemented through the legislature and signed into government. Slow process for them, so they decided to move all those requirements to give them regulatory authority within the state to do that. Policy also needed to change as HIE expanded. So initially in one of those states where the public health agency was the HIT coordinator, they eventually moved, as the HIT expanded and the planning expanded, they had to move it to a quasi-governmental agency or a nonprofit because basically the public health agency didn't have enough flexibility to develop the HIE over time, to own the HIE over time. And there's a big success for them. They're as co-chair of the board for the HIE. And then integrating health, public health objectives in the state policy. In New York, they include interoperability as a part of the certificate of need process for siting hospitals. So one of the requirements of the certificate of need is that they have to get involved in the SHINE process for the state health information, their state health information collaborative work, and adhere to all the standards. And then they also include in Medicaid coordinate in their coordinating Medicaid care coordination activity, they require meaningful use in there too. So that also requiring Medicaid care coordination would support meaningful use, and almost indirectly and support public health agencies because they're trying to get information from electronic lab reporting, immunization registries, and syndromic surveillance. And then in Nebraska, they found that they actually had to implement a new law to support the collection of data more robustly. So the state authorized, and I think it's Legislative Bill 591, they authorized the state public health agency to start collecting syndromic surveillance data and to collect immunization registry data. Immunization registry data was actually, and it's interesting for this one, because immunization registry data allowed access to camp directors, to schools, and to, I believe, parents to allow them to see data within the immunization registry. Again, it's providing... the state's providing sort of a clinical, providing a value in participation with health information exchange. So that's what we have. When those are the states we talked to. We talked to Connecticut, Maryland, Michigan, Nebraska, New York, and Utah. One thing I'd like to say about Utah before I forget, and it was a line that we forgot to include, was one of the things that Utah had done from when we talked to Wu Zhu from Utah was that they had decided to, they call it filling up the well. So they wanted to provide as much data as possible to the HIE. Immunization data, metabolic screening data for children, vital records, everything that could be involved, they're trying to push it out there. So that the healthcare people, healthcare constituency out there is going to see HIE as a support and actually in support and see public health as a necessary thing out there. So hopefully that will, and see them as... good trading partners. And we also like to thank the people that were involved in the Meaningful Use Survey. So that's all I have.
Questions?
Yes. We generally look to CSDE as they're the CSDE and APHL is taking a lead in the ELC grant. But you also have to think of, remember, the ELC grant is almost a mechanism for funding states. So different programs can throw money in to support states. So ELC funding went down, I believe, a couple years ago. And then HII funding after the High Tech Act came in. HII funding went in there and actually filled a lot of spaces for a lot of states because there would have been great layoffs. So we always support CSTE's ask for that, for the ELC funding. I believe they have an ask of, I think it's $90 million or something like that. So that's our view. But I think, again, we need to have a little more coordinated view of our e-health policy committees. They have to have more coordinated focus on infrastructure funding and have a sort of, I think that would probably, in this whole business of funding states, I think that would be the most difficult to align different federal programs that would support, have public health support things. Any other questions? Yep, go ahead. That's the goal, yeah. So Utah started out, and actually I can defer to you. Well, the person from Utah here, yep.
A couple of really senior and long-time executive in, you know, the State Department of Health retired, like Dr. Del Mar, Dr. Perry Smith, you know, who have been really, you know, the teacher for the whole generation of, you know, more junior staff in the New York State Department of Health retired. And many people, you know, told me that, well, the department would no longer be the same. Or the department that we know grew up is not there anymore. I think that is applied to public health in general. Public health, as we know in the past, is not there anymore because of funding, because of a lot of different. And it applies for public health IT and public health informatics as a whole. I mean, we can argue for the merit of funding for public health and public health IT all day long. The fact of the matter is that in CDC defense, they don't get to bring money. They had to spend and give out only the money Congress gives them. And Congress gives them only so much money because, you know, the whole country is in a budget, you know, crisis. And right now it looks like that, you know, the priority for funding is in health IT. Well, and I think that, you know, public health is going to have to come to health IT. I hate to say that. And we have to change, you know, the way we're doing business to fit into that model. We have to. Because, you know, we can complain all day long. It just seems like there's no more money coming. The other thing too is that we have to look at, you know, public health IT system, you know, right now. Most of them are developed, you know, by categorical funding. And the level of interoperability or integration is very low across, you know, the country, in my opinion. And continue, you know, the funding to maintain all those individual systems as it is, you know, today, I just don't think it's sustainable. I just don't think it's sustainable. So public health IT, you know, and public health informatics is how we have to look at that and change, you know, how we're doing it in a better way, fit into how, you know, the country is moving, you know, forward with, you know, health IT. You know, the other thing I want to mention too is that some of the barrier that, you know, I completely agree with, you know, the barrier that, you know, mentioned in this presentation, but some other issue we have to look at workforce. Believe it or not, we have an aging public health workforce, especially public health IT and public health informatics. Like in my bureau, you know, the State Department of Health, all of the senior managers are going to retire within 5 years. And on the state side, we have only 2 new staff in the last 3 years on the state side. We're very lucky that we survived with, you know, grant-funded staff, but it's getting more difficult every day. I have been teaching in informatics, you know, in Albany for the last 3 years. I teach probably 6-7 classes with, you know, 100 of students. And I have begged, I have pleased, but none of them want to go and work in public health. Even we have opening. And they show me the offer they got, you know, on the private side. We can't compete with that.
One of the things I should have mentioned, too, that Utah actually also did was they realized that they couldn't support, they had no argument for hiring a public health informatics people in the state. So what they did was they developed their own civil service line and series of individuals that could be informaticists, because what they were doing was they're hiring them as an epidemiologic level, and it wasn't enough to compete with the private sector at all. So they'll be, I believe their WHO said that they'll be pushing that, hopefully getting that approved by their state office of human resources soon, if it's not already done. Yeah, it was approved last week. So I think a lot of states are asking for those civil service lines too, those type of civil service lines. But other people are arguing for Bureau of Labor Statistics to support collection of data on health informatics. So if they do collect on health IT, they also want to include public health in there too for health informatics. And then finally, adding to the workforce thing, there's, don't want to take the thunder of the workforce group that's over there talking right now as we speak, but one of the things we've noticed too and we've heard from people is that it's not only just the direct informatics workforce that's out there, but the people who have to react to the informatics workforce. So the people in chronic disease, whether or not they're informaticists, they're going to be have to work with the public health agency, understand why standards exist, what business processes are, project management, all the different aspects of informatics and data in databases. You know, they have to be able to deal with meaningfully, no pun intended, with the with informaticists within the state too. So that's also another issue. Any other questions? Great. Thanks.